So here we have a lesson on work, and I thought about taking off my jacket and rolling up my sleeves and looking like I'm actually doing something. The old joke about preachers is they only work one day a week, okay? And some would say, oh, only maybe 2 or 3 hours a week. That's all they do, just 2 or 3 hours a week of work, and that's what people see. And so someone said that to me one time, and I said, well, actually, I don't even work that. I don't work on Sundays. I do not work Sundays. I worship on Sunday, and at worship, I do my part. That's what I do. But everyone else that is worshiping on Sunday is also doing their part. And if you want to call that work, that's okay. But actually, what I'm doing is worshiping. And when I am delivering a lesson, that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm serving God, trying to glorify Him, and trying to serve you likewise. But I don't consider this work. I think sometimes it's harder to listen than it is to be the speaker. And we've seen that. One time I was going to speak, sitting on the front row of a pew, something like this, and my leg went to sleep. And I thought, this is embarrassing. I'm going to stand up and fall flat on my face. And just embarrassing that some part of me went to sleep and worship, especially when I'm going to be speaking publicly. And then I consoled myself. I've actually seen entire bodies asleep in these pews before. And so I didn't feel so bad because of that. All right, let's talk about work. When we talk about stewardship, I said this Sunday, we need to be sure that we're not talking just about financial things, financial matters. In fact, I've got the booklet that some of you will be studying this summer. And everyone's going to get a copy in this congregation that wants one. If you want a copy and you're not here and you're not going to get one of those which is distributed, just ask me. Just give me your email address and I'll email you the e-version of this copy. I want anybody and everybody that wants to study this subject to have access to this material free. And so all you have to do is email me. And you can ask me for my email address or give me yours or something like that, and that's fine. But 5 years ago, when I first wrote this material, I called it financial stewardship. And everybody I told about it, they immediately went on to a different track of mentality. And so I changed it to Sons of Light in a Material World. And of course, as you saw Sunday, it's based on Luke chapter 16, how that there would be those who are called Sons of Light, but yet it defines who would be the true Sons of Light. And it refers not just to financial stewardship, it refers to all material stewardship, that every opportunity, that everything that we see, everything that's in our homes, every opportunity to help others, materially, everything materially, God is telling us that these objects, which are disposed by most of the world unto evil. In other words, they direct their hearts and their affections towards these objects instead of towards Him who created these objects so that we might use them for His glory. And so it is material stewardship. That's why we have the title Material Stewardship when it comes to Sons of Light in a Material World. And so I think I took every expression that was found in 60 pages here of financial stewardship, and you'll always see it expressed as material stewardship. I did that on purpose because so many people would reduce what we do for God simply to the dollar and the exchange of money. It's not. It's every material opportunity. Another reason why I did that is because I don't want someone to think because they don't have money that this lesson doesn't apply to them, because it applies to you even if you don't have money, and even if we are indebted to the point of which we could live 4 generations and never see daylight. We still have opportunities today with other things that we would touch and be able to serve God with, which are material. So we need to get into that mindset and understand that's the scope of the series. So let's talk about work itself. Work is obviously something that entails something material. And some would say, well, work is work. If maybe, like when I was a high school student, went out for a summer job and I hauled hay, and that's work. I mean, that's really work. That's where you're bucking bales and you're sweating and you're fighting wasps and everything else up in the barn, and that's really work. But it's not really work if you're doing something that's in an office and you get to wear a tie, okay? And so I remind you this, that work is work. Work is work. Even if it's mental work, it's exhausting. For instance, the farmer, he doesn't get through in the field, and he goes into his house. He says, you know, I'm really tired. I want to just kick back, and I want to do my taxes. You know, nobody does that, do they? We put that off. Why is it? Because even though it's entailing just a mental effort, it's work. Work is work. And so I call it work because it's not play. It's work. And it entails that which is going to require us to attend to it, and that we're going to have a task of which we have to accomplish, and we want something to be produced by that, and usually that means income. And then we want also to get along with others, and we want to teach our children how to work. Let's look at this as God being first a worker. God first being a worker. In Nehemiah chapter 4, verse 6, it says the people had a mind to work, but what I want you to see is some more passages. And let me just bring all this up. I want to go ahead and get this up because it goes really quickly. All right, look in the book of Nehemiah, and we're going to go to chapter 1 to begin with. But I want you to think of the concept that the reason why we need to work is because God works. So we're talking Nehemiah chapter 1. Let me see if I can get my glasses on so I can use my Bible. There we go. So we start in chapter 1 in verse 3. Let me get this on. That'll help. Sorry about that. Now we're good. Wonderful. All right, this is the story. This is the setting. The Israelites, they had been released by their captivity. They had been in Babylonian captivity, so they've been released. They've been brought back to the city of Jerusalem. We talked about yesterday of the fact that they needed to rebuild the temple itself, and they needed to focus on the right house. Today, we're going to talk about them rebuilding the walls of the city of Jerusalem. And so for hundreds of miles, they migrate back to the city of Jerusalem. And you would think for people who want to have an identity with God and their own identity, that they would reconstruct that temple and they would build the walls around the city. And then they would be protected and be identified as the people of God. They didn't do that. They got back and they were slack in building the temple. And then they were really slack in rebuilding the walls of their city. Walls of a city were very critical for defense purposes and for definition purposes. And as far as I can figure, it was maybe somewhere between 80 and 100 years after the first group came back from Babylonian captivity that we see the message of Nehemiah coming. And Nehemiah gets word here. He gets word that those walls have not been constructed, and he is beside himself, and he's weeping to tears because he knows that this does not comply with God himself and with the will of God. And so let's start reading here, Nehemiah chapter 1 and verse 3. It says, "The survivors who are left from the captivity in the province are there in great distress and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is also broken down. Its gates are burned with fire." So it was. Verse 4, "When I heard these words, that I sat down and wept and mourned for many days, I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven." So he asked the emperor, he says, "Can I go back to my homeland? Because I want to go help get these walls reconstructed." And so he turned to chapter 2. Chapter 2, then he gets back, and then he's going to encourage the Israelites to reconstruct the walls. Verse 17. He says, "Then I said to them, 'You see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lies in waste, and its gates are burned with fire. Come and let us build the wall of Jerusalem, that we may no longer be a reproach.' And I told them of the hand of my God, which had been good upon me, and also of the king's words that he had spoken to me. So they said, 'Let us rise up and build.' Then they," that's the Israelites, "set their hands to this good work." Well, they had some foes. They had some enemies. Chapter 4, verse 1. "But it so happened when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, that he was furious and very indignant and mocked the Jews. And he spoke before his brethren and the army of Samaria and said, 'What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they fortify themselves? Will they offer sacrifices? Will they complete it in a day? Will they revive the stones from the heaps of the rubbish, stones that are burned?' And now Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him, and he said, 'Whatever they build, if even a fox goes on it, he will break down their stone wall. Hear, O our God, for we are despised. Turn their reproach on their own heads and give them a plunder to a land of captivity. Do not cover their iniquity and do not let their sin be blotted out from before you, for they have provoked you to anger before the builders.' So we built the wall," verse 6. "And the entire wall was joined together up to half its height, for the people had a mind to work." So that's a sermon within itself. Hey, wait, that's what we're doing. Okay, good. In Nehemiah chapter 6, then, verse 15, after all the oppression, and after the people began to build, incidentally, if you've read the story, you know that they had to build holding their burden in one hand, and in the other hand they held a weapon, because these people did not want the Israelites to finish their construction, but they finished. So we begin in Nehemiah chapter 6 and verse 15. I hope you're following along. So the wall was finished on the 25th day of Elul in 52 days. 52 days. What did I say before? 95 years? Something like that? 80, 90, 95 years that they'd been waiting, dragging their feet? Took 52 days. Why? Because the people had a mind to work. Verse 16. Very critical here. Verse 16. Nehemiah 6, verse 16, and it happened when all our enemies heard of it and all the nations around us saw these things that they were very disheartened in their own eyes. For they perceived that this work was done by our God. That's a critical statement right there. In other words, they saw these Israelites who had a mind to work, and someone says, well, if you set your mind to it, you'll get things done. But the conclusion of their enemies, their God has done this work. Their God has done this work. I want you to know, and I appreciate what Steve said last night when he said that work, for some people, is a four-letter word. Work is not a bad word. It is not a bad word. God always works. In John chapter 5 and verse 17, Jesus was accused because he had healed someone on the Sabbath, and they said, well, he's blaspheming God. He healed on the Sabbath. And Jesus says, God works hitherto and so do I. That's the King James vernacular. God works even until now. God works always and so do I. And so Jesus is doing this. He's saying God doesn't take a day off. He doesn't work 6 days and then take a day off. God's always working. And they might be thinking back to the command about the Sabbath, and it's given in the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20. And of course it says, remember the Sabbath to keep it holy. And it talks about in 6 days God created, and then on the seventh day he rested. But what did he rest from on that seventh day? He rested from his works of creation. He did not rest from all his works. If God quit working, the lights would go out, correct? Everything would be extinguished if God quit working. And Jesus is saying God always works. And when they say, well, if you say that about yourself and equate yourself with God, you're claiming to be God. And Jesus says, you right on. You are right on. Because I'm doing the works of God. And the whole book of John is about the fact that Jesus is deity. He is God. And everything about him is about God. And Jesus worked on the Sabbath, the spiritual works of God, just as God the Father does. So this is what I want us to know. God's a worker. God is a worker. We claim to be the children of God. We need to be workers because God is a worker. He works hitherto. He works now. And so does Jesus. Then we see that we're created to work ourselves. This is important. If you read Genesis chapter 2 and verse 15, God told Adam, he says, to tend to or to dress and keep the garden. And this is a critical time point because he tells him to do that before sin ever came along. Someone says, well, I have to go to work. I guess I'm in trouble. Let's go. Let's do it. And it's as if God's punishing us. We have to work. No, actually the concept of work was around before any punishment took place. Punishment doesn't take place, as you see here. This is in Genesis chapter 2. Punishment doesn't take place until Genesis chapter 3. Work is a blessing. That's what it is. It's a gift of God. It's the rule. Rest is the exception. God did not create his people to leisure. I don't know why, but a lot of people say, I want a vocation where I'm going to have a lot of free time. Just free time. I'm going to be able to relax. I just like to relax. And I ask people, I say, what have you been doing? Nothing. That's scary. And then don't ask your kids that, because somebody's going to get in trouble before it's over with. And then you say, well, what are you doing? We're hanging out. That was an expression. 20 years ago, I was writing up the camp brochure. We directed FC camp. It's a youth camp, and we did this once a year. And so I'm trying to write up a brochure which would be enticing to children. And what I found out was the only thing that you have to do to get children to come to camp is to say other children are going to be there. That's all you have to say, because they'll do anything to get away from the adults. Okay. And I asked my daughter, I said, what do you want to go to camp for? She says, to hang out. I put it on the brochure. I just had to do it. Rest is the exception. It's not the rule. We need to understand That is what God purposed us for. Work, work. And then we're not created for leisure. Heaven is the place of which we'll finally have rest. That's a different sermon. Lazy is a bad word. Proverbs chapter 10 and verse 26 says, vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the lazy man to those who send him. Ever had vinegar on your teeth? Ever had smoke in your eyes? I think one or the other, probably. You look at a lazy person and that's exactly what you feel. Exactly. It nails it. And then we see in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, let's actually go to 2 Thessalonians chapter 1. We'll look at that other one later. 2 Thessalonians chapter 1. What I want you to see here is that the Thessalonians had some problems. And they were in many other ways complimented. In fact, when we had the sermon yesterday about the Thessalonians, they are the ones that abounded in the grace of giving. They are the ones that had that ability. But there were some exceptions at Thessalonica of folks who were condemned because they would not work. Now, we're in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. We've got to start in verse 6. He says, but we command you, brethren, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you withdraw from every brother who walks disorderly and not according to the tradition which he received from us. For you yourselves know how you ought to follow us, for we were not disorderly among you. Verse 8, nor did we eat anyone's bread free of charge, but worked with labor and toil, night and day, that we might not be a burden to any of you. Not because we do not have authority, but to make ourselves an example of how you should follow us. For even when we were with you, we commanded you this: if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. This gets more serious. Keep with me here in verse 11. When he says, for we hear that there are some who walk among you in a disorderly manner, not working at all, but are busybodies. Now those who are such we command and exhort through our Lord Jesus Christ that they work in quietness and eat their own bread. But as for you, brethren, do not grow weary in good doing. And if anyone does not obey our word in this epistle, note that person and do not keep company with him that he may be ashamed. And someone says, hey, listen, I attend church services every time the doors are open and I sing hymns and I'm somebody that even gives. And he's saying, you know what? If you've got the problem that you don't want to be a worker and you don't want to provide for your own and that you are going to not eat the bread of idleness, he says, you are going to be marked by your congregation as not being a faithful Christian. Now, reading that from the first century, okay, we're thinking, wow, they really had some problems, didn't they? We're seeing this all the time in Colorado Springs right here in the 21st century. We've seen Christians that behave just like these Thessalonians, not all Thessalonians, but these Thessalonians that thought, as long as I worship God, then I am a valid, virtuous Christian. As long as I worship God, as long as I know my Bible, that's going to, you know, make me acceptable to God, and everybody ought to just welcome me. And he's saying, it does not. In fact, if I'm lazy, and if I will not work, and if I will not provide for my own, he says that I should be marked, and I should be left as one who is ashamed. Now, he doesn't stop there. He says in verse 15, for 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 15, yet do not count him as an enemy, but admonish him as a brother. In other words, we're going to be marked as being unfaithful, but we're going to be encouraged to return to the faith. And what would returning to the faith entail? Working, taking care of what I need to take care of and not being a deadbeat or being a freeloader or someone that wants to mooch off of brethren. I grabbed the wrong remote. This is for the computer. Okay. I'm all right. Here's some scenarios. I'm going to come over here so I can read them with you. All right, Jeremy isn't job searching until the last employment check clears. These are circumstances. By the way, some of the names that I use in these scenarios are actual people that I know, unless it's something that's negative. And then I put some substitute names in, okay? But some of these are going to be positive, and I want you to know that these are real people. And these are real events that have happened in my experience. So Jeremy isn't job searching until his last unemployment check clears. Then you've got Connor and Tabitha. They're a married couple. They're the busiest retirees on earth, and they work voluntarily for others. Here's George. He's proud about being lazy. George's goal in life is to do as little as possible. George has an ambition for underachieving. Here's Rochelle. She's busy. All day she watches TV and social networks. This tires her out by the end of the day. And then you've got Omus. Omus turned down a promotion for a good reason. He decided there are more important things than job promotion. So these are some of the attitudes, some good, some not so good, that we have experienced. So let's go to this. Why work? These are not rocket science. By the way, we've got a rocket scientist, a retired rocket scientist in our congregation, and he was also a part-time preacher, but he's a full-time Christian. And he takes exception to me saying that. So let's look at the passages, and that is Ecclesiastes chapter 9, verse 10. Whatever you put your hand to, do it with your might. Mom said it this way: if a job's worth doing, it's worth doing what? What? Say it. All right. She said right. If it's worth doing, it's worth doing right. Somebody said, well, that's the same meaning, okay? I speak Eastern Oklahoma Hick, okay? And I do speak other languages, too. I'm a multi-language person. And then Colossians chapter 3, verse 23, whatever you do, do heartily as unto the Lord, not as unto men. Do it heartily. Whatever you do, if you're going to do it well. And we will use well now. Consider the ant. Proverbs chapter 6. We've got to turn to Proverbs chapter 6. I want you to read this. Consider the ant. Starting in verse 6. He says, go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Why? Which, having no captain or overseer or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. How long will you slumber, O sluggard? Will you rise from your sleep? Oh, sleep, a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands, so shall your poverty come on like a prowler and your need like an armed man. And so here's somebody that's lazy, and this is what he says they deserve, and sometime, at some point, this is what they're going to get. They're going to get poverty coming in like a burglar, like an armed robber, and saying, I'm going to overtake you and force you into poverty and into great need. He says, you deserve it. You deserve it. And so this is what's humbling, is he uses this minuscule ant as an example to us. This tells you God is a worker. And he, in all of his creation, he employs work. And we ourselves need to look at the ant that works without a supervisor. You want to know the true test of if you've grown up, if you're a real adult now? That's if the supervisor walks off and you still do your job. The ant does. So why work? Number two, it provides obvious things. A, B, C, it provides our living, it provides morale, it provides opportunities to spiritually serve family, church, neighbors, and strangers. And if you're like me, sometimes I'm doing jobs so that I can get back to what I really want to be doing, right? So that's the next step. That's the opportunity. And I always like hearing the whistle. I used to, in a college job, I worked on the assembly line making Whirlpool refrigerators, and when that whistle would sound, of which I get to go home, I loved it. It was great. It's great to work hard and then get to rest. That's wonderful. But let's look back at this. You'll notice that I have parentheses beside number two where it says it provides. And the reason why I put that there is because it talks about different types of jobs, whether it be a paying job or whether it be domestic work. Domestic work is this. It's when I sweep out my garage, I'm doing domestic work. No one's paying me to sweep out my garage. And then I have that other word, volunteer. Volunteering. Isn't that work too? Volunteering is work. So it could be a case of which you can't find a paying job. You'd like to have one, but we've had some of our faithful brethren that have found themselves unemployed. And so they still do their chores at home. I've seen a whole lot of folks that if they get unemployed, they just get depleted of morale and they sit at home. And I said, well, what are you doing? I'm just waiting for the phone to ring. Well, have you thought about vacuuming the floor while you're waiting? Okay. Wash the dishes. Do something. Don't just sit there. This is a home. This is your home. Work. Work. Do stuff. I believe if a person is in motion doing work, that itself helps you get a job. Because when people see workers, they say, wow, businesses need workers. It's hard to find people that will work. And they see somebody working, they say, wow, I wish you'd work for me. I need workers. I don't need slackers. And so whether we're at a job or whether we're doing domestic chores or whether we're volunteering, work, work. It provides a living. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 8, if any provide not for his own, especially for those of his own house, that he has denied the faith and he's worse than an unbeliever. So we go back to those Thessalonians. They were saying, oh, I'm a high and mighty Christian. I can tell you what the gospel of Jesus Christ is, and I sing in the pew, and I attend church services. And he says, but do you provide for your own? Then you shouldn't even eat. That's what he says. This one takes it a little bit further. He says, you're worse than an unbeliever. Before they were marked and shamed, and now he says, you're worse than an unbeliever. Don't profess your godliness if you're not a worker. And providing for those for whom you're responsible. And then Proverbs chapter 31. I love Proverbs 31 because it talks about the virtuous woman. When does she sleep? It says that her candle goeth not out by night, and then she rises while it's still dark. Well, when did she go to sleep? I'm trying to figure that one out. But it also says that she eats not the bread of idleness. It provides morale. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 15, laziness casts one into a deep sleep. If someone is lazy and they're just hanging around wherever you are, it'll drive you nuts. It will. You're like, move, do something. Don't be around me if you're not going to be busy. Because I can't stomach it. It starts tasting like vinegar and feeling like smoke in my eyes. And I can't take that very long. And then letter C, it provides opportunities. As I said, we get the work done, then we go to what we really want to be doing. This is sad, but I know people that want to get away from their family and they use work as an excuse. I do the exact opposite. I get all my work done so I can get back to my family. Number three, it works for others. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 28, let him who stole steal no more, but rather labor with his hands, so that he might have to give to those who have need. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 28, what's that for? This really boggles the mind because he says the reason why you go to work is not so that you can help yourself. The reason why you go to work is so that you can help others. And primarily back to the parable of the unjust steward, he says the reason why you go to work is so you can help God. That's the reason you go to work, to help God. But so we had a family one time and they could never make ends meet. And they said, yeah, we've got all this planned out. We know how to hit all the meals just right at Grandma and Grandpa's house. And if the kids don't have shoes, we just send them over. Papa, I don't have no shoes. Or, Papa, my shoes are wore out. They said, it's a system. It's a racket. And these grandparents, they are suckers. And that's the way they looked at it. They never had enough. And the reason why is because they had set a bar, and that bar was to take care of themselves and themselves only. You'll never reach that bar. God will not bless you if that's your bar, if you're self-centered. We saw that as we looked at Haggai chapter 1 yesterday. What he's going to do is send a famine, and he's going to send a dearth because you are self-centered. And it is not serving God for us not to provide for our own or for us to think that the reason why I go to work is so I can take care of my family. Leave me alone. No, the reason why he says you go to work is so that you can take care of others. And if you set that as your bar, you will be taken care of. It will not be a concern. I love that passage. Proverbs chapter 22, verse 29, it influences others. Do you see a man who excels in his work? He will stand before kings. And so we had a fellow, he was unemployed, and he had his teacher's license, and he couldn't find a job. So he goes to a school and gets a job with a broom, okay? Guess what? They hired him as a teacher the next year because they saw him in motion. And if we work like this, then just like Joseph in the Old Testament, eventually we become an employee of the king. Exciting, exciting stuff. It shows God's ultimate work. That's not the United States, that's us. It shows God's ultimate work. We saw there in Nehemiah chapter 6 and verse 15, I want to look back at that again because really when they got through with the work, notice again what the enemies, what their remark was about this great work of this this wall being completed. I'm going to find it here in just a minute. Nehemiah chapter 6 and verse 15. Verse 16. And it happened when all our enemies, I put 15, but it's verse 16. When all our enemies heard of it, that is the completing of the wall in 52 days, and all the nations around us saw these things, that they were very disheartened in their own eyes. For they perceived that this work was done by our God. And so sometimes astounding things take place. And somebody says, I don't want to work, and I certainly want to avoid hard work. I want to find something where it's easy. And these people did hard work, and they accomplished something that was just unbelievable. And their enemies said, this must be the work of their God. I wonder if anybody's ever said that about me. When I worked in small government, it was called a metropolitan district. And every Monday night, not every Monday night, once a month, on Monday nights, it was always a Monday night, we had a board meeting, sometimes 3 hours, sometimes longer. And I called that a necessary evil. Okay? It was hard. I didn't like it. Mostly it was people that showed up because they liked to hear themselves talk. Do you enjoy that? I don't enjoy that. But we had some things we had to get done. And so my wife would say, well, what's going on today? And I said, it's just another Metro Monday. That's a playoff of song from the 1980s. I think they said it's just another Manic Monday. It was manic, too. But I'd say it's just another Metro Monday. I did not want to go to those meetings. And I wonder now, because that's been probably 15 years ago, but I just wonder now. Doing something that I really didn't enjoy doing. Did anyone look at me and my performance and what I did and say, this must be the work of his God? Because we've talked in Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 10. We looked at Ephesians yesterday morning about how that we are created in Christ unto good works. So God created us, and now he wants people to understand who our Creator is. He didn't create us from what material we had humanly, and certainly didn't create us from the world. He created us from his divine power and his divine grace. He made us so that we would have spiritual attributes and bear fruit, that people could see that the material that he created us shows him. Work ultimately shows God. Work ultimately shows God. Now let's do this. Did you miss any of this? Because I want to do a little review. I don't always do a review, but I'm going to do one right now. Work is about the task. It's got to be done. You know, you tend to the gardener. Whatever it is you have to do. Everything's got thorns and thistles, but it's got to be done. But it's just not about task. Work is about providing, but not just about providing. But it is about providing, and very necessary, and we need to provide. Work is about assisting others, but it's not just about assisting others. Work is about showing God. That's what work's about. That we are his ultimate work. That we are his ultimate work. And there's that expression again from Nehemiah chapter 6 and verse 16. This work was done by our God. Did you know how important your work is? And it doesn't matter if you're pushing a broom or if you're president of the United States. How important is our work? So what's your impression when you think about these things? Here's how we go. You maybe were here yesterday and we do a survey. If you agree with it, hands held high. Hold it up for 3 seconds. And if you agree, thumbs up. If you disagree, thumbs down. And if you are kind of give or take on the subject, you can do one of these what I call indifferent, just flat hands. Okay. And it's important, again, that you have your own opinion and that you look around. It's okay. It's a survey. It's an open survey, a public survey. And I like seeing what you think about these things. The first of which is, what do you think when you think about eating? Okay. All right. Oh, good. That was 100%. How about working hard? Okay. How about lazy people? Good. Just a second. Hold them up. Hold them up. Let's see. Okay. Hold them up. I see a baby holding up her thumb. Okay. It was not a thumbs up. It was indifferent. Okay. How about thieves? Okay. If you don't work, that's what you are. You're just a thief. We'll talk more about that. Let's talk about capable people who avoid work. And I had to put the word capable up there because there are a lot of people that avoid work, and sometimes some have to avoid work because of some medical condition, some kind of physical condition. I understand that, and I think you do, and I know that God does. But capable people who avoid work, they use different reasons and employ different things, stealing, dishonesty. And the Old Testament covers that. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 11. I want to tell you about a young boy, 6 years old, and he was one of our neighbors, and his family visited services several times. So not only were they in our house, but also they were in the assembly hall that we were renting at that time. And he was a good thief. He was really good at stealing. 6 years old. His family found in his room, they found that he had stolen something out of his teacher at school, his teacher's classroom. And she had missed something, but she didn't know where it was. And they're like, wow, there's that object that was stolen from his teacher, first grader, okay? And then he had stolen some trinket out of one of our daughter's bedrooms. 6 years old. I mean, this guy was good. He stole a Bible out of our assembly hall, okay? Stole a Bible. And we always joke about somebody stealing a Bible, but he really did it. He stole a Bible. And then they had another set of friends of which he had stolen the wallet of the dad. And this dad lost his wallet, and he's like, wow, this is terrible. Got to replace all this stuff. And he had so they totally stripped out his room. They stripped out his closet. They had to shake him down and find out everything and uncover it, get all the skeletons out of the attic and so forth. And because this guy was really good. He's smoking good at stealing. And somebody thinks, I'm going to go steal from a real, a retail establishment, Walmart, maybe it's JCPenney or whatever it might be. Or I'm going to steal from my employer. I'm going to steal from the federal government. I'm going to cheat on my taxes. And that's how I'm going to get ahead and really feel proud about that. And I've seen this happen and think that they're genius. And I've had adults brag to me. Not as a preacher. I've had secular work, and when people start talking to me, they don't realize I'm a Christian, and they just start spilling their guts, and they're bragging about how they steal. It's an epidemic. People are dishonest, and they're stealing, and they're proud of it. I want to tell you, I've got a six-year-old that can leave you in the dust. So what? Stealing's because we're lazy. And dishonesty. Proverbs chapter 13 and verse 11. Wealth gained by dishonesty will be diminished, but he who gathers by labor will increase. So the more you steal, the farther you get behind. Number two, bumming. Bumming. That means I just want to crash at somebody's house. It could be a relative. It could be a Christian. It could be just anybody. And I'm saying, well, I found someone that's an easy mark, and I'm going to go hang out there. So we look over to Proverbs chapter 25 and verse 17. Proverbs 25 and verse 17, where he says, seldom set foot in your neighbor's house, lest he become weary of you and hate you. Other people have said it's sort of like fish. After 3 days, you begin to smell. And then I've heard this one. Don't stay longer than 3 days. They might want to have a fuss. Okay, you like that one? I don't know. Anyway, don't overstay your welcome. And someone says, well, I've got no place to go. Nobody appreciates that. Take care of yourself. There are circumstances. Again, if someone is unemployed, yes, we've had people live with us. We've had many families in our congregation that would help someone that was involuntarily unemployed or someone that has a health problem. We understand those circumstances. I'm talking about someone that's a capable person who avoids work, and they think they can get by bumming on others. And then the abuse of government handouts. One can be owned then by the government. Now we'll look at that 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, and what the instruction was to the Thessalonians, of which some were violating. And we'll start in verse 11. He says that you also aspire to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your own hands as we commanded you, that you walk properly toward those who are outside, and that you may lack nothing. What is he saying here? He says, take care of yourself. And someone says, why take care of myself? And the government's going to give me a handout. That's exactly the opposite of what he's saying here. I'm not against the government giving handouts. I've seen cases that warranted a handout, and I'm thankful that we have a government and we have this United States of America that has the most giving people of the world when it's warranted. But if someone is simply looking for an angle of how they're going to take advantage of the government, you see what it's doing to the government. The government cannot afford, no government can afford to take care of deadbeats. We must not fall into that category if we're servants of God. And then immoral businesses. In Acts chapter 19, they were making silver idols after the image of Diana, the goddess of the Ephesians. And those that got out of that business, they destroyed their businesses. They burned them. They burned the books of their trade. They didn't sell their business because they said this isn't a sellable quantity as far as what God would be pleased with. They destroyed it. So, capable people who avoid work sometimes get into immoral business. And sometimes those who are incapable do the same thing. How about witty schemes outsmarting conventional work? Get rich quick or gambling? 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 9 through 10 warns us about wanting riches. Wanting riches. There's one thing to be industrious and to want to provide for those things to assist others and to ultimately be the work of God. But if we're saying, I want to be rich, I'll tell you this, when I graduated from high school over 30 years ago, I went to the career trailer at that time. They pulled up a trailer and you go in, you look at different vocations, and they're saying, okay, what's your GPA? And you might want to be this profession or that profession. Say, for instance, you might want to be a doctor, and because you're going to make, at that time, they were advertising $30,000 a year, okay? That would be the poverty level today, right? If you said $30,000 a year to someone that's going into medical school, they might think twice, you know, before they volunteer for that job. But anyway, they didn't say a thing about these other objectives that there are sick people. They need help. You've got tasks. You need to assist others and care about the world and what you're going to do and what it's going to do for God. All they said was, look at the dollar, look at the dollar. And somebody says, well, I want to get a dollar, but I want to get it right now. And I want to take shortcuts, and I'm going to figure out a system. 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 9. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness, and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. The love of money. He says the pursuit of riches, wealth. He's teaching this. He says if that is your drive, it's to your own destruction. Lessons from the scenarios. Remember Jeremy? He's not job searching until the last unemployment check clears. So here's my response. Don't be upstaged by an ant. Okay? Ants prepare for the future. They don't wait to see what calamity comes down the track and say, okay, here, I guess I'll figure this out. They don't work off the cuff. Number two, Connor and Tabitha are the busiest retirees on earth. They work voluntarily for others. That says it all. You notice I didn't put any comment? That says it all. They're doing the right thing, aren't they? Isn't that great? They're volunteering. And if you can't find employment, volunteer. Do something. Move your feet. Is what we need to do. Use our hands. Volunteer. You will get work. You will get work. But if you just sit there, it's not going to happen. George is proud about being lazy, so George's goal in life is to do as little as possible. George has an ambition for underachieving. Go hungry. And we've had to say that to a few folks. Go hungry. This is the Lord's decree. That's heaven speaking. Rochelle, she's a busybody with idleness, meddling, gossiping, and we said a moment ago, she Facebooks, she watches TV and all this kind of stuff. Quit bringing blasphemy upon the name of the Lord. Because if you read 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 13, that's exactly what we're doing. It's not just relaxing to do those things. It's bringing blasphemy upon the name of the Lord. Number five, almost turned down a promotion for a good reason. He decided that there are more important things than job promotions. This almost happens to be almost Lancaster. He lived in Columbus, Indiana. He worshipped with what then was the 10th Street Church of Christ and a good friend of mine. And he just related this to me one day. He says, well, I just turned down a promotion. Why? It's because it was going to eat up too much of my time, and we get by. We're making a living, but I almost served as one of the shepherds of that church at that time. You can see his dedication level. He had his priorities right. He did. Promotions are fine, but sometimes they're not, and we need to understand that. So, I want to back up before we do the checklist. There are reasons sometimes of which you cannot find a job or of which you cannot take a job. But sometimes there's just excuses. We're still in the... No, we're not. We're not in the Proverbs. But look at Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 13. We've got to look at this because sometimes there's just excuses. Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 13. He says, the lazy man says, there is a lion outside. I shall be slain in the streets. Now, how do you argue with that, okay? There's a lion outside. Now, if I go out there to get a job, I'm going to get killed. And so it reminds me of the two farmers, and one farmer goes over to his neighbor's house. He says, I need to borrow your rope. And the other farmer says, can't let you have it. I'm using it to tie up my goat. The first farmer says, but you don't have a goat. The second farmer says, when you don't want to do something, one excuse is as good as another. But here are excuses. And my response to that is, you know, you've got a good excuse, but how's that working for you? Does it put food on the table? Your excuse, it doesn't put food on your table. And I take it from the words of the inimitable Dr. Phil when he says, how's that working for you? Don't you like that? So somebody says, I have a vision for which I am working. I know it's left us in peril for years, but hang with me. That's not working. How about this one? In order to eat, I don't work, I borrow from friends. I don't have a problem with this because I plan to pay them back. Honesty's not my problem. I just need to borrow frequently. How's that working for you? I'm highly talented. Even though we're broke, I refuse to do manual labor. One man told me that he wanted a job where he got to wear a tie and he wasn't going to take any of the job. He's broke. How's that working for you? How about this one? I'm an elephant hunter. Yes, an elephant hunter. When I get one, everyone really thanks me. I haven't killed one in a long time. I refuse to hunt small animals because I'm an elephant hunter. Until I get an elephant, I'm staying flat broke. How's that working for you? Number five, I have a complicated system. It's ingenious. Do you have several hours? I can explain my complicated system. I don't have time to work, but I have time to explain. I left my day job making a little for my dream job, making less. It leaves my family in peril, but at least I'm living my dream. I want to put preachers into that category too. Somebody says, I want to preach. Well, we have a family to take care of. If we have to make tents, let's make tents. Let's take care of our family. Don't live our dream and abandon our family. We've already seen if we provide not for our own and for those of our own house, we've denied the faith and worse than an unbeliever. Final one. He says, I'm taking time to pray about my finances. I have a crisis. I'm just not working while I'm praying. Yeah, you can pray. Keep working. How's that working for you? You know, it's time to go from what might be plan A to plan B. It's time to go from maybe from plan A to plan B plus plan C. You do what it takes. You serve God. And someone says, well, nobody else has to do that, and I shouldn't have to do that. God says, yes, you do have to do that. You have to do it. When you look at Joseph in the Old Testament and you see Joseph, who is first cast away by his own family, he went out on a chore by the instruction of his father, and his family discarded him. And someone says, well, nobody should have to take that. So he goes into slavery, sold into Egypt, and he's a slave in the house of Potiphar. Nobody should have to be a slave. So he's then sent down to prison, okay? And there for 2 years, and then he becomes the head of the prisoners. No one should have to work in prison. And then Joseph becomes a government employee. Don't they have all kinds of respect? Right? Not really. They should. A government employee. This is Joseph. Now just backtrack in your mind and say government employee in prison, a slave, cast away by his family. In every one of those capacities, he let others see that what he did is the work of his God. It really didn't matter what he did, did it? Did it? He didn't have excuses. If anybody could have had excuses, don't you think it would have been Joseph? And yeah, I've done a lot of jobs I really don't like doing. But the harder the job, the most undesirable jobs of which I've done are the very jobs by which I've gained the most respect from others. And that's what Joseph did. Let's look at the checklist. And we have to answer this for ourselves. No hands. I'm thankful to be capable of working. I'm thankful to have work. Remember, God is the single most powerful force, economic force in the universe. How do you get jobs? God provides jobs. Thank God I have a job. I want to work because of what it accomplishes for God and others. I work even when circumstances are not perfect. I work with joy without complaining, even on a Metro Monday. I work without comparing myself to others. That's a hard one. That's the checklist. We can work on these things. Here's the conclusion. Our God is a worker. The sons of light must have a mind to work. I'm through preaching now. As we traditionally do, I want to extend to you this opportunity for us to serve you. If you want to come to Christ by confessing that He is the Son of God, having repented of your sins and submitting yourself in obedience unto Him in baptism, we will assist you. Or if you want to return unto God and to be encouraged by this group as your family, we want to serve one another. We want to be the work of God. Come forward now as we stand and sing.